listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
For the next 2 hours, feel free to call into the program at 800-313-9443. For some time, I have declined being on radio programs because I have an allergy, and which causes me to cough unexpectedly, and so I don't accept many offers to be on many radio programs because of this cough. And when I have a guest on, I mostly luck out, and I can always silence or mute my mic, which I do on a frequent basis, and then I cough and then I unmute the mic and nobody knows the difference. So for the next 2 hours, I don't have a guest. So hopefully my allergies, hopefully I won't cough. But if I do, I hope that there will be some people who will call in and save the day. Anyway, the telephone number, of course, is 800-313-9443. On Monday, October 9th, some people in this country celebrated Columbus Day, which is a federal holiday. However, some states like Alaska, Hawaii, Oregon, South Dakota and Vermont do not recognize Columbus Day at all. And other states, some other states like to say, well, it's indigenous, they celebrate the indigenous, people, which I think is much more appropriate. But today I'm going to share, a chapter from The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation. And the name of the chapter is Columbus in the Caribbean, Slavery and Slaughter. I do not celebrate Columbus Day. He was a mass murderer. And I'm just, we've all grown up in the government schools thinking that he was some sort of wonderful hero. And it's just a big lie. And I get so upset about this, among other things that I get upset about. But let me give you a little background. In Europe, land was the primary source for producing revenue, so land ownership was understandably a necessity. Alternatively, private land ownership was non-existent in the African culture and the legal system, which has a lengthy history of slavery. In Africa, the upper classes owned and used slaves as the primary source of revenue-producing property. Inheritable, taxable wealth production exists in both cultures, whether it is products from the land or products from someone else's labor. Gosh, that sounds like the United States now. Anyway, African slave trading, and there are some correlations. African slave trading was widespread prior to the Europeans' acceptance and participation in the institution. Britain's elite and their slave trading partners utilized the existing slave delivery system to their benefit. Central African slaves, indicative of the owner's wealth, were dependent, loyal, and valuable to their owners. They managed administrative tasks, functioned in the military, and could acquire wealth and power, as well as producing wealth for their masters. People outside of the Central African culture consistently viewed the slaves as not particularly valuable other than for revenue production. Traders and their agents kidnapped a majority of them. Therefore, they were expendable, especially in high level commercial ventures. Early labor intensive commercial crops like cotton, indigo, and these are cash crops. Cotton, indigo, tobacco, and sugar generated the evolution of the plantation system. It required a very large labor force to maximize profits. In 1419, the Portuguese, who had a large naval fleet, discovered Madeira, an archipelago in the mid-Atlantic Ocean. They soon colonized it and planted sugarcane, which became the leading cash crop. In 1448, the Portuguese, in need of more labor, kidnapped more than 1,000 Africans to work on their plantations. Each year, they seized an additional 800 to 900 Africans for slave labor. Imagine that. In 1484, Christopher Columbus proposed his plan, the Enterprise of the Indies, to John II, the King of Portugal. He wanted the king to equip 3 ships to search for a western route to the Orient. Unfortunately, the king was preoccupied with the potential civil war and disputes with Spain to consider Portuguese sea exploration. Columbus also wanted the king to designate him as the great admiral of the ocean sea, which was, of course, the Atlantic Ocean. The appointment as governor of all lands that he discovered and 1/10 of all the revenue from those lands. The king, his experts, and his scientific council rejected his proposals. Okay, we do have a caller, so let's take Dan in Hawaii. Dan, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good, and how are you?
I'm doing good. I caught the tail end of your program here. I'm on the Big Island in Hawaii.
Okay.
You had a gentleman on that seemed to be pretty sharp to me. And I didn't get his name, and I was in the kitchen when he was signing off, and he said his website, but I couldn't quite make it out.
It was Jordan Goodman, and his website,
J-O-R-D-A-N. Jordan, like Jordan.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know whether that, J-O-R-D-A-N, Goodman.
Okay. Oh,
and
Goodman.
Yes. And his website is moneyanswers.com. And he did have quite a lot of very good information. And if you visit his website, he will answer specific questions, and you can create a dialogue with him. He's a very nice gentleman. Had a lot of
success. Yes, and he seemed very intelligent to me. Did he have to leave a phone number?
No, you would have to reach him through his website.
All right, I will. I'll continue listening to your program today.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
And what is your name?
Deanna Spingola.
Deanna.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hi, Deanna. I'm Daniel.
Okay, great. And you're probably having better weather than people here in the Chicago area.
Well, what's your weather there?
It's pretty stormy. We had a lot of storms last night.
Yeah, I've been in Chicago. It gets cold there.
It does.
Yeah. It's about 70 degrees here and sunny, and my cats like it. I've got 9 cats.
Oh, my goodness.
And I live out in the jungle on the Big Island on the wet side.
That's great.
Yeah. I like
That's
it.
That's great.
Have you ever been north to a town called Wilmette?
Of course, yes.
And have you seen that big egg-shaped building? I went through there. The Baha'i building.
I've never been in it.
Oh, they're a church. I thought maybe you'd seen that structure. That's incredible. It has 9 sides to it.
Huh.
So, just wondered.
Nope, never have.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in, and enjoy that beautiful weather and your 9 cats.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt your...
Oh, no, that's fine.
Your syllabus what was it, Canary Islands, wasn't it?
We're talking about Christopher Columbus.
About Columbus.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll continue listening. Thank you,
okay.
Dan.
Thank you, Dan. All righty. So anyway, the King John, and his experts and his scientific council rejected his proposals. The king may have been indignant over Columbus's demands and his overbearing manner. However, he did consider his requests, even presenting the adventurer's ideas to a scientific council who apparently decided that Columbus failed to convince them that there was a westward route to the Indies. Even after the council's negative response, the king apparently remained interested in the project. He even secretly directed some navigators to take 2 vessels and sail west to determine if Columbus's objectives were realistic. The ships returned as they had encountered strong headwinds. Okay, I see we have another caller. The king abandoned the project as he had no choice due to the economic circumstances in his country. Columbus, still intent on the project, totally failed to get somebody to support it. Anyway, he simply had to find other sources, other financial and political support elsewhere. Politicians, educators, and some historians have all but canonized the son of mapmaker Domingo Colon. Cristobal Colon, now known as Christopher Columbus, who lived between 1451 and 1506, was a Genoese mapmaker who received training in the Madeira sugar trade, which undoubtedly involved an affiliation with slavery. Those same people refer to him as the Great Navigator, as America's first great hero. Numerous individuals, including many in the Jewish community, claim that his family was a Spanish Jewish family that settled in Genoa, Italy. His Spanish Jewish friends arranged for him to meet with the Spanish monarchs in 1486. Authors Tina Levitan, Harry L. Golden, and Martin Rywell claim that Columbus was Jewish. Golden and Rywell based their assertion on the statement of Ferdinand Columbus, Columbus's son. He wrote that his father's progenitors, and I quote, progenitors were of the royal blood of Jerusalem, unquote. Whether he was or was not Jewish, the Jews financed his exploration. Columbus's plan of sailing west from Iberia in order to find a faster route to the Indies proved incorrect. He wanted to establish a faster and more efficient course than traveling the overland trade route through Arabia. If his idea proved correct, Spanish traders would engage in the lucrative spice trade, which the Arabs and Italians had always dominated. Okay, let's take a phone call. Let's take Mark in Georgia. Mark, welcome to the program.
I don't know if you've seen Adam Ruins Everything, where he actually had a cartoon section that where they, you know, they had that little school bus thing with the public broadcasting where the school teacher teaches the kids, and Adam saying, well, actually, Columbus was a navigational idiot that had America not been in their way, they would have run out of provisions and died out in the middle of the ocean. And so he never set foot in America, but basically he killed a bunch of people in the Caribbean over gold they didn't have in the first place. That sound about right?
That's about right. And that's what I'm going to cover.
Have you seen that? The Adam Ruins Everything?
No, I actually haven't. But
The thing is, he uses humor, and some people don't like, well, you're a liberal. Like, well, more like I'm checking things out. And, I mean, the one thing I take issue with is that he had this guy on about global warming, and I think we're on the same page that that's just as much a hoax as the so-called war on terror. But let me sidebar here for a second. Let me ask you something. I get the impression you studied German, correct?
I've never studied German.
Well, you know,
I did as a kid. As a child,
okay.
I studied German. Would you also believe that I studied Hebrew and Spanish? I took Spanish in high school. But it's been a while.
When the professor in seminary said, Jesus Christ was crucified on the Greek, Hebrew, and Latin, I said, yeah, I can relate. So I was just wondering if you'd happen to know. I wanted to get the exact German quote where I could put it in German in a nice Gothic font where the exact words where Hitler said, it is well for rulers that men are stupid, and then transition it into English. No, I think it more accurately rendered would be, it is well for rulers that men do not think. Not so much that they're not stupid, but they have the ability to think, to know better, and they don't use it. Does that sound about right?
Probably. I think that most people are obedience trained. We learn to be obedience trained through the government schools, and we learn it that we cave into doctors, to policemen, to everybody that is an authority figure. And we've been trained to do that. If you're going to quote somebody, I'm advocate of footnotes. If you're going to write something, if you're going to quote somebody, then you really need to say specifically where you got that quote. A lot of people, a lot of people have created or given quotes supposedly from Hitler without any reference, and you find that he didn't say that at all.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to like this little proverb I have, is that you can get things straight from the horse's mouth, because if you go to the other end of the horse, you're going to get what you have coming. And that's like people say that, feel like one of the quotes that I've heard, and I know this is kind of like, had Hitler succeeded, we would have looked at him in the same way we look at Columbus, completely wrongly. But the thing is that, there's things that you need to attribute things accurately, because I'm just curious, because I was hearing this thing that basically after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he made a speech that in the original German was like, your leaders are making peace impossible. And it was intentionally misrepresented to make it sound like he started the war with America. And it's like, well, yeah, but that's kind of like the same way that Ahmadinejad is falsely accused of threatening to wipe Israel off the face of the map, and when that's not what he said at all. So
I understand
how these dark powers, and you know, in the regards to Columbus, there are two sides of this. There's delusional exaltation for people like Columbus, and then there's vilification. And I'm not a fan of Hitler. I don't think he was this great guy, but I don't think he was anywhere near as evil as those that actually antagonized the Germans to hate Jews. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know that anybody antagonized them to hate Jews.
Okay.
I think that you have to go back quite a bit in history and not begin with when he came to power, when he was elected to power. You have to go back to the original Marxist revolutions, and that's where it all starts.
Well, here's where the source I got for that is one of those, there's not many, but there are anti-Zionist Jews websites, and they point out that the Zionists fanned the hatred against the Jewish people by their Zionist deceptions, right?
We have a 3-minute commercial break. If you'd like to stay over, that would be great. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And we were talking with Mark in Georgia. Mark, are you still with us?
Yeah. So I take it you were basically in concurrence that the deception of the powers that shouldn't be basically are there's two different polarizing things. On one side, you know, like Uncle Joe Stalin is our friend, and this evil bad guy Hitler, who is, you know, if Hitler hadn't come along, they would have found somebody else to do the same figurehead of evil. Like, you know, through the years, we've had various, you know, Saddam Hussein or Bin Laden blamed for 9/11.
Well, let me interrupt. If you have a country's leader who is trying to assist and puts his country's citizens ahead and gets rid of the bankers and does not buy into a central bank and actually promotes the benefits and promotes his people and helps his people and develops the land and gets rid of the middleman and benefits his people.
Gaddafi did with the Libyans, correct.
Exactly. Then you are going to be called evil and you're going to have military action against you because that's the way it's done. And I think that people are beginning to realize that because they make comparisons between what happened to Germany and what happened in Libya. Iraq. Look at Iraq. So
that's where I want to remind the people that are in the military, remember your oath, all enemies foreign and that's where
domestic.
I draw this little blank. Yeah, domestic. And the enemy domestic are the people that are, you know, basically I'm preparing a document. I get Spingola.com, correct? I can send this to you. I'm preparing a document. I think I'm going to change the title to Hell with the Plutocracy, a spiritual declaration of war against the synagogue of Satan. Because my quarrel is not with Jews. My quarrel is with phonies that although they call themselves Jews, they violate every moral tenet of the Torah. And that's in red ink. That's straight out of the lips of Jesus Christ. So
okay, the Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament. Okay, that has nothing whatsoever to do with the Talmud.
The Talmud is
a whole different thing.
Exactly, because the Talmud is a direct, explicit violation of the Torah that says, "Thou shalt not add to God's word." And then they add things that the problem is, you know, there is so much to the Talmud. I could spend the rest of my life reading the Talmud, and I have no intention of doing so. But there are excerpts of the Talmud that are extremely disgusting. And I don't put that on all Jews. That people, we may read it and they just skip over things because they're like, ugh, I don't want to deal with this. So they mentally skip right over it, just like they skip over Leviticus 25 verse 23 that says, you are sojourners here. You people are traveling through. This is not your land. You're like the tenant farmers. And that's where Christ made a parable of the tenant farmers that were supposed to pay rent in the way of handing over a portion of their crops, and they didn't do so. Look, here's the son. Let's kill him, and then we can take the land for ourselves. And what do you think the vineyard owner is going to do, meaning God? He's going to kick those wicked people out. So we're not making a blanket indictment against Jews. We are acknowledging that there are phonies that falsely call themselves Jews. And is Columbus Jewish? Well, I think we have to clarify what is and is not Jewish.
Well,
there are, right?
It just depends on, as I said in my remarks thus far, some people, including Jewish people, Jewish writers, claim that he was Jewish. His son seems to indicate that he was Jewish. And whether or not he was Jewish, he was financed by the Jewish community.
I can see that. Yeah, one of my heroes was Keith Green, and I was watching a video, and I heard something, and I was like, well, I'm not sure about that. But when I saw a video of Keith Green himself saying, I was raised I was a Jew, and I didn't know I was a Jew until I was 13. Oh, I'm not
well,
really,
also,
but his parents were Christian Science, so.
Well, you also have to. You also have to consider the Khazar theory, which I do believe
in. Oh, absolutely.
In. And there's a lot of evidence to prove that that is in fact true. That that these people, the Jewish people now, have absolutely no ethnic background.
Sounds like we're coming up on another break here.
Okay, we'll be back in 3 minutes. Thank you so much for your phone call, Mark. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And during the break, I thought I better elaborate a little bit. I mentioned that as a young person that I had studied Hebrew, a little bit of German and Spanish at school. I was studying Hebrew because I was so suckered in by the 6 million. I had such empathy. I was just heartsick that these people were slaughtered, or that I thought they were slaughtered. I believe they were slaughtered. And when I found out about it, I wanted to I don't know why. Why does anybody do anything? Empathy. I had a great deal of empathy, and misplaced. Anyway, you can tell a lot by a person by how they act towards others. And when we're talking about Columbus or anybody else, any group of people, any individual, it's how they act. That's how you can tell that with their mentality. And Columbus was horrid. Anyway, let's take another phone call. Rob in Illinois. Rob, welcome.
Well, thank you, Deanna. Thank you, Deanna. It's pretty wet in Chicago, huh?
Oh, it's awful, isn't it?
Well, you know, we've escaped. We've had some pretty decent weather for the most part, so
that's true.
So bad. You know, I was spinning off the last what you were just saying. Some guy in a previous broadcast was saying how he actually read an authentic German document, and towards the bottom of it says 271,000 Jews, and this is a document for World War II, and referencing how many people died. And at the bottom of this document says 271,000 Jews died. Now, it's not saying nobody died. It's just saying 271,000 died.
Well, if you look at the Red Cross figures, they have a pretty complete
schedule. Document,
about,
as you mentioned it, the Red Cross document.
Yes. And they really clarified things pretty well. And it wasn't Cyclone B, and nobody had a plan. There was never a plan discovered, and certainly if there had been a plan in place, the Allies would have shouted it from the rooftops.
No, we learn through now these independent broadcasts, and if anybody bothers to pick up a book sometime, they'll learn more about it, and which it's helped me learn more about it. I didn't know how many lies were surfacing, how these lies come about, where these lies come from, but now, you know, thanks to a little more access to information or access to people telling you where to look for the information, I'm a bit wiser now. So,
and that's wonderful.
Very
and
good.
We should all educate ourselves.
Absolutely. And as reference to your last phone caller, he was saying, however it was, it just made me think that the Zionists or however you want to call it, have been controlling information for a very long time. They learned this a long time ago, pre-telegraph, you know. They've sent misinformation, you know, across the seas to let things, you know, the misinformation gets across, other people start spreading that information, and it's totally opposite, like they did with the Napoleonic Wars, saying how that, the results of that were false, and that way they were able to conduct their next move.
That's right.
So,
and that group of people have always had communications. They've always been in control of communications. And were some of the earliest people to use what was then modern technology to communicate with each other. They've always been very cohesive as a group, and so it has worked for their benefit. And then also, they've also created their own problems. For instance, with the pogroms in Russia, you have to wonder, okay, who was actually behind these pogroms? Because at that time, at the time that the pogroms were supposedly occurring, they had about one third of the country of Russia, which is a huge country. They had one third of it was just for that group of people. And they should have been happy, but apparently they weren't. They wanted access, more access, take as many inches as possible. And then of course this also played into World War One, and after World War One, people from the East came into Germany. They bought up property. There were people, Germans were living in cellars, starving to death. And for 9 months, the sanctions against Germany were kept in place until they signed, well, they had signed the Versailles Treaty, but the sanctions were kept in place for another 9 months. And thousands upon thousands of Germans perished from starvation. And they lost their property, and you had people from the East come in and buy up that property and then take control of such things as the theater, medicine, education. So it was set up, the whole thing was set up for another world war with just a space in between. For the Allies to get their bombs made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty sick in how they've managed to turn all that around. It's, you know, not us, them, you know. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's sickening. And if we're looking at, we're looking at the writing on the wall, that they're trying to do that here in this last vestige on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the USA, and I think all that's pretty much coming. I think they're trying to replicate it, just, and it's obviously, it's a modern.
It's already been replicated. It's already been replicated. I have always viewed the so-called Civil War as the first successful Bolshevik revolution, because following that war, then you had a corporatocracy in place where corporations were given personhood, which displaced real people, and the whole country is, well, every school district's a corporation, most every village is a corporation, every city's a corporation. You have corporations running the country. The country is a corporation. It is not a country, it's a corporation. And the current CEO is Donald Trump. And so if you look at it as a corporatocracy and recognize that that is really, it's really communism is what it is. It failed in Europe. So they came over here and many, 500,000, people from, was it 500,000? Sometimes my figures are wrong, but most of those Marxists that came over, I would say 99% of the Marxists who came over fought for the North. And they never would have been successful in subjugating the South. And you have to realize what the South was simply a colony of the North. They were creating cash crops, which I mentioned before. And the cash crops were cotton and tobacco. And most of the trade took place with the North. The North was the middleman. And pretty soon the South started asking questions. They wanted to have some sort of independence. And so when you read about the history of the South and what happened and why it happened and the culture the culture of the North and the culture of the South was totally different. Absolutely, totally different. And everything kind of took place in New York. But anyway, did you have some other questions before we go on? I have some other callers.
Right.
Or
right,
comments?
Yeah, as far as the Goodman conversation,
yes.
Very enlightening, and he gave a lot of good leads of different things you can look into if it interests you. I appreciate that. I want to make a reference to the Experian, what they call, they've been calling a hack, but I've heard reference that, you know, this is the day where, day and age where they sell the
yes.
data. They take your data and they sell it off and they sell it off. Well, Experian got greedy and sloppy and literally were selling off people's information, but they just turned around in a manner where they kind of like left the door open and say, yeah, you know,
yes.
here, give us some money and come and grab what you need. Or come
yes.
grab what you want, and basically let this barn door open for people to come in and out as they pleased. And this is basically how this information got out. And they're like, oh, well, let's just let the door open, take what you want. And that's what they did. They took what they want. So was it actually a hack? We think a hack. We think people, one or more people in a group, and they're designated, they're focused on breaking down the door, right? But this is literally like, hey, thanks for the money. Doors open, do whatever you want, we'll see you later, anything else, just ask. That's what I heard happen.
Well, I made this little comment at the end. I said, well, maybe it was the IT guys over at LifeLock who hacked, who hacked
right.
the credit company, because really it benefits LifeLock, and
yeah.
you have to wonder, how could somebody so smart really hack into a situation like that? You really have to ask, because Equifax should have had the best people ever to take care of that information. And it also makes you wonder, I don't like to be on lists. I don't like to sign up for things. You don't know who's collecting information, but with the credit, the three credit entities, Equifax being one of them, they have your information. Well, gosh, who do we really want to share our information with? But that's how you get your credit reports, and everything is based on credit. It is a system that from World War II has just gone wild, gone crazy, and Goodman brought that up. People used to actually save before they bought something. And now that is just unheard of. People are used to going out and buying something and then figuring out how to pay for it. And they buy things because they, I don't know, the consumable things too.
Because it can't. Hey, you
yes.
remember a few years back when the Soviet Union, quote unquote, collapsed, which was basically a charade all in itself.
Oh, it was all
the economy was collapsing.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, right. But remember they were selling stories over here in the United States how they were trying to teach the people of Russia how to use credit cards, because all these retailers were moving in there then, JCPenney and Levi's were all moving in there, and they were starting to pull off their capitalism, but they had never really had credit here. Like Goodman was saying, that we didn't have any credit cards or any of this before a certain period of time, and they used to have this Christmas savings account and so on, and that was the same thing over there. If you didn't have the money, you didn't eat, you didn't get nothing. Well, they were trying to do that whole business of credit cards over there. So I don't think it kicked off the ground, considering that we hear that they kicked the central bank out. What do you think about that?
Well, I know that I did an article about that, Project Hammer, and the Bush family went in. They allowed certain people to take over monopolies, and you'll have to read that article. It's on my website. I believe it's called Project Hammer. So what we've been told about what happened in the Soviet Union / Russia and what actually did happen and who got all the goodies, you really have to look and see what actually happened.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
I'll look into that. Last thing, and I'll take the,
Bush Families Project Hammer. I wrote it in 2010. And it's Bengola.com. Bush Families Project Hammer. Gives all different views of things.
What projects I got, hey, was Preston Bush part of, Operation Paperclip? Was he brought over during that? Is that how he got over?
I don't think so. I don't buy that story. I don't buy that story.
Okay,
The Bush family's been in this country for a good long time. Before Preston, okay. Certainly.
But they're, I guess their involvement to whatever. Well, I'll get off of that. I'm going to take this off the air, and I'm debating whether or not to bring it up, but it is the hot topic. I'm burnt out on this myself. I'm sure you are. I'm sure a lot of listeners are, but I don't think I've heard anything from you on it. But the question is, obviously, Las Vegas, and I'm just going to ask where your gut is leading you, what your thoughts on it are, and the how, the who, the what, and the big and capital letters if. So I'll leave you with that, and I'll take your information up there.
Okay, thank you for calling. As far as Las Vegas, we did a program on it last week, and this occurred 2 weeks ago. And in the very first week, we had so many conflicting stories. So many things occurred, and 58 people died. Over 500 people were injured. Some of them are still in the hospital. And yes, 58 people died. And the perpetrator, apparently, supposedly, was on psych drugs. And typically, when you're on Valium, and Valium can affect different people in different ways. What it can do to one person, it might not do to somebody else. And he was on Valium. And Dr. Peter Bregan says that he had unconfirmed, it was unconfirmed, but he had information that suggested that Paddock was also on another psych drug. And I've also watched some short videos that a friend sent to me about guns that you can acquire that have magazines that can hold 100 bullets. So in 2 weeks' time, I don't think that one can speculate about anything. The things that we do know, 58 people died and over 500 people were injured. It took me when I was researching Sandy Hook. Oh, okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And somebody asked me about what I thought about Las Vegas. And as I mentioned, it's been 2 weeks. When I was researching for on Sandy Hook, I spent a year and a half looking at everything, looking at thousands of crime scene photos, looking at all kinds of things. And it was a terrible tragedy. I don't know what happened. I don't know how many shooters were there. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on it. I do know this, though, that although there were a lot of people hurt and 58 died, if people in this country, in their interaction with allopathic medicine, 880,000 people a year die because they have interacted with allopathic medicine, where is the yellow crime scene tape around the hospitals? What about all the children who are affected because of vaccines? Those are the questions that really need to be asked. What, not how many shooters there were. It was a horrible thing that happened. But there are more horrible things. And I think that we need to take a step back and really perceive things as they are. And so that's my answer. I don't know. All righty, let's take Werner in New Brunswick. Werner, welcome to the program. Haven't heard from you for a while.
Good evening, Dan. And, you know, we appreciate very much. You are basically one of the few people who start thinking outside the box. And I think more of us have to do that. And don't buy all the pre-chewed and pre-digested information we get from the controlled media.
Or from the non-controlled media. I think that...
it's not just only mind-controlled. They cannot be that stupid.
Well, certainly. But even in the so-called alternative media, we were bombarded with so much information that people just want to throw up their hands and say that it's just too mind-boggling. How can all this information, conflicting information, come out? But anyway, you didn't call to talk about that. So, Werner.
Well, I looked at another point. You know, when we look about all the crimes that have been perpetrated by humans against humans over,
yes,
especially the last 2,000 years.
Yes.
And I was thinking about among the animals. I don't think there's any species who has been that vicious fighting their own kind as among the human species.
I agree with you. And there I have seen videos of animals that were supposed to be enemies who liked each other and got along. And I think we could learn an awful lot from the animal kingdom. We're at the top of the hour. So if you'd like to hang on, we'll be back in 3 minutes.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Werner, sorry for interruption here. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. No, when you watch, sometimes we can watch when some of the most vicious predators, you know, like lions or other animals, when they about who is leading the tribe, you know, who is leading the herd or so, when they come into a disagreement and they start fighting. As soon as one of the combatants basically gives up and gives a sign to the superior animal, then they lay on their back, and then the other one walks away.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what is done with modern warfare.
No.
You know, and it wasn't just only Germany. How many other countries ever since, and the civilian population have been devastated?
You're right.
And then we have to look at here in North America. I basically look at it and say a lot of people, they had been whipped up by propaganda movies, over 500 propaganda movies, to find useful idiots to go for the bankers to war.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they're still producing them about World War II.
Yeah, and here in Canada, they got a law, inciting hatred about identifiable group of people. You know, the same way in some of the European countries, in Germany and so on, you know.
Right.
But maybe precedent cases have to be established, going after the movie studios and the ones who finance those movies, initiate those movies, to drag them into court.
Their rationale is that it's simply entertainment. But people look at TV and they think that it mimics life. They don't think it consciously, but they get the idea that it mimics life. And people, when they're watching these movies, they're not participating. They're not actively reading something. And there is more of an opportunity to indoctrinate people who are watching a movie than there is if they're reading a book. It's just something about the vehicle for the transfer of information. And people accept this as true. They don't say, well, this was written by who wrote this? Who wrote the script? What was their objective? Why are they doing this? And people don't critically think about that.
Yeah,
and they don't read history. They don't read history. They get most of their information now, not from reading, but from watching movies or YouTube or whatever. And one of my favorite sayings is, people who do not read have no advantage over those that cannot read.
Because the ones who do not read, they watch the movies.
Well,
they get everything presented, you know, ready, and they digest it.
Everything has been abbreviated, and we've learned to accept this. Okay, when the calculators first came out, they were really, oh, gosh, they were very expensive, from what I understand. And now people use calculators, and they've lost the ability to add and subtract. We're losing our abilities, our skills, because of the technology, because of the convenience of things. We've lost our ability to interact with each other so that we can talk about our problems, our issues. And as far as getting back to Las Vegas, I am surprised that there are not more shootings than there are, because there's a lot of people on psych drugs which have black box labels, which have warnings that say this drug might cause suicide or homicide ideation. And yet people who take these drugs, they never assume or think that it could be them. It's like the person who smokes. Oh, I'm not going to get cancer. This isn't going to happen to me. It's going to happen to the guy next door. And so when we avail ourselves of pharmaceutical medications and pharmaceutical products, we need to really realize what we're doing and what kind of consequences those products have on our bodies. I don't know how I transferred from calculators to that, but we just need to wake up and look what's happening to our culture and, find some method of dealing with it on an individual basis.
And, we have a certain amount of IQ, you know, and if you don't use it, we lose it. With a lot of those drugs and everything that are being prescribed by the so-called medical horse for hire and psychiatrist, you know, they should be held accountable.
But who's going to do that? Because
it takes people to finally say we got enough, inform themselves about it, you know, and then hold the so-called experts to task. And about the so-called indoctrination that's happened in the universities. Who controls the universities? Who finances universities? And whoever finances it, you know, basically sets the parameters for the curriculum that's being taught in universities. And we know
who
is putting up the money.
See, most of your universities are corporations. And they have a board of trustees. And the board of trustees decides what the curriculum is going to be. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we are a corporatocracy. And so it's a big fight to, so We may not be able to win the war, but we can win our individual battles by making choices that are relevant to us. Each person is responsible to educate themselves so that they can make choices that will be of benefit to them. Whether it's not to vaccinate your children, which of course I wish I'd never done, or not to take psych drugs. There's so many people on psych drugs, and it is now that school teachers are instructed to look for children who might have a problem, whether they're overactive, which most boys are overactive, and to get them on drugs, because if they do that, then they get more federal money. It's all a big scam. It's all about money.
And you talk quite often about the, you know, revision of the history about the last 100 years and the wars. People in the Allied countries have been involved, especially against Germany. You know, mm-hmm. I got a real wake-up call a few years ago when I came on the Internet across the original speeches Hitler gave and some of his the leaders, International Socialist Party, in public addresses. And it sure did not fit the picture we were being presented when I grew up in Germany after the war, where the school curriculum and the media and everything was being controlled by the Allied forces.
Right. No. They denazified the entire country. They got rid of all the teachers. They took over the communication system. They took over everything. And Germany has never gotten a constitution. They are still, they're still occupied.
Yeah. And as I say, when I went to agriculture college in the mid-60s, we were being sent for 1 week to basically a training course where they taught us the Allied version of the history between 1933 and 1945-46. And it was the same crap about the 6 million and all that,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then I came across, according to a census of the Jewish census in 1938, about the different, the number of the different people in the world that are members of the different religions, and mm-hmm. it was stated that from the Jewish religion there were between 15 and 16 million people.
They're the only ethnic group that actually increased
by approximately 400,000.
Yes, that is according to their figures, not anybody else's.
Yeah, and there were not 6 million missing, whereas all the other countries that were involved in the war, they had millions of lives lost.
That is true.
You know, and as I say, I look at the basic facts and figures and statistics, and this is what we have to do in order to cut through all the crap we have been getting through the Hollywood propaganda. And we know who finances Hollywood and who makes the money.
Sure. That is true.
Yeah.
And they admit it. Admit it. They say we own Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious. And certainly it has a great impact on our culture. Because, especially on the younger generation, they want to emulate all of those glamorous people that they see. And,
yeah.
That's pretty sad.
At least on your side of the border, you can still speak out about it. But here in Canada, it is a criminal offense. In Germany mm-hmm. and in some other European country, the people who speak out, they run the risk of being criminally, prosecuted,
that's right.
Yeah.
And even here in this country.
Well, they got other ways
it's
of...
It's not a popular thing. Yeah, we censor ourselves.
They got other ways of cutting down on any kind of an opposition that questions their version of history.
That's true.
You know?
Werner, we have some other callers who have been on for, oh my goodness, almost an hour. So.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for calling. I always love to hear your voice. Take care.
No. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, Ed in Utah. Ed, welcome.
Yeah, Deanna.
Oh, thank you for holding on. Bless your heart.
Yeah, not a problem. A lot's gone on in the world and in the news since I last spoke with you. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, we've gone lately from Hurricane Harvey to Harvey Weinstein.
Yes.
And
both very destructive entities.
Yes, very destructive. In fact, a couple things I want to kick around with you. One of your past guests, David Duke, he said that he had urged Donald Trump in the days before Donald Trump actually said something the other night concerning the NFL football situation tomorrow with Jerry Jones down in Dallas. And he said he urged Donald Trump to essentially call for a boycott of the NFL, which is essentially what Donald Trump did the next day, which, of course, caused David Duke to say that they can't directly contact him, but they do listen to some of the things he has to say, as they do with Pat Buchanan and Paul Craig Roberts, et cetera, and perhaps even RBN, I hope. So what I want to kick around with you, this could be pounced upon, yeah, Diana, and this could be a golden opportunity, as some are saying, the Weinstein revelations. In the previous show, on the previous program, one of the guests had made the comment that, keep in mind that these revelations, although true and what have you, they've been known about for 12 years, suppressed by the New York Times and what have you, and the New York PD, about Weinstein. And therefore, it leads to this. Is there a turf war? And can this turf war be agitated for the purposes on our part, Dana, of exposure? Because, as Dr. David Duke said in his latest on DavidDuke.com, that Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood and all the filthy pigs that run it, Harvey Weinstein is the Jewish rule, not the exception. And keeping that in mind, and the type of crap and dehumanizing, not even perverted, the word doesn't describe the Weinstein movies, The Priest and The Crying Game, and his he was defiling these women, Deanna, the same way he was trying to defile America with his movies. And this can't just be confined to that powerful pig. Even Limbaugh has been referring to him as a powerful pig in second tense, you know, so he doesn't get a lot of direct heat. But he's been doing that because of this fella. This should be taken advantage of from all quarters. And it sure is telling who in the, as you put it, so-called alternative media, where they're not pouncing on it in the same way. They're talking around it. They're poking fun just at Weinstein as if he could have acted alone when, heck, he was tapped into the Democrat hierarchy and what have you, Hillary Clinton et al. So that's kind of what one of the points I wanted to make with you and your feedback.
Okay, well, I was talking with somebody this morning about this particular thing, and I used to work in the textile industry, and I ran into, well, the textile industry is monopolized by that particular group. And honestly, I didn't meet a lot of men who were decent. They were a lot of womanizers. Liars, they tried to cheat me out of commissions that I had earned. It's just they're pretty much all the same. My experience has been that they are pretty much the same. Now, whether it's just in the textile industry, but look at the culture, look at the movies. If, I remember at a time when my children were little, we got rid of the television because it was so awful. And then about 7 years later, we got conned into getting a TV. So we got this little TV. I was absolutely shocked by the change that took place in those 7 years. The garbage that's on TV now, oh my gosh, it's,
Yeah, Deanna, all the Protestant scriptures of the 60s have been just gotten rid of by the wayside. And
Lucy and Desi used to sleep in separate beds. And now you have sex scenes on regular TV. And you think, and you don't think. It happens incrementally to the point that people just accept this garbage as entertainment. Yep. When it is really altering our culture in a very, very horrible way. Horrible way.
Right.
Especially our young people.
Yes. And, when you look at, the pedophilia, and what General Flynn was trying to push Donald Trump into going after them and John Podesta, and the whole Pizzagate deal, that some say, credible people, that's one reason they got rid of them. I think Paul Craig Roberts thought the same. So back to this culture war and the second part of it. Football is not that important in the overall scheme of things, Deanna, of course. But the culture that has bred it and the rise of the Negro in the hearts and minds of the young through this media, and the NFL Football Network and the gods that run it. Maybe David Duke had a heck of a good point, and perhaps there's a speck of whatever. Who expected Donald Trump? I didn't. I didn't know he was thinking along the lines, taking time out to go after the NFL and the anthem and flag debacle. But it's like he took on the culture war. It's like he jumped into it. And he forced some to back down, at least show some kind of respect. Some of the things that did the hearts good of a lot of us. Not that this is going to necessarily go anywhere, but he did jump into this. Do you see any other ulterior motive that I may not be seeing?
Well, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump.
Oh, we have a break. We'll be right back.
This is Deanna, and we were talking with Ed in Utah, and you asked me what I thought of Donald Trump or about the situation.
Tomorrow's NFL game.
Well, if you really look at the history of the NFL, if you look at the history of how it got so militarized and everything else, if you look at the history of how they started using, the Pledge of Allegiance and all the uniforms and everything else. I think I'm more concerned about the fact that he is continuing to increase troops in the Middle East when in fact he said that we didn't belong there when he was campaigning. So I'm not looking at the NFL. To me, it's a small thing. I'm sorry, but it's a small thing. And as I say, if you look at the history, it's just kind of insignificant.
Yeah. Well, my thought on that could also be this, Deanna, in the broad base that got him elected, I was one of them that was rolling the dice, as many of the network here did, and me as a caller. But the broad base were the people that could have been easily conned, and right in Utah, so many were looking toward Ted Cruz, and then regrettably, so many were looking at Evan McMullen in a three-way split for Hillary and what have you. So if Trump is playing politics to assuage some of them people, could this be a move to curry some of that favor tomorrow, when also tomorrow is a very big day on the political world stage, where he has talked a game about getting out of this, in his words, this terrible Iran nuclear deal, but in reality, he will keep it going to the dismay of the tribal lobby that controls us. Could he be trying to carry his base and keep that intact, Diana, so he can do this, sticking his finger in the eye of Netanyahu?
Probably, because nobody's going to be elected president in this country unless if you look at the protocols, years ago, 100 years ago, they said, we elect the presidents. Okay, we had two people to choose from. Hillary Clinton, and most of the people that voted for Trump actually were voting against Hillary Clinton. What choice did we have? We would have been better off picking somebody out of the phone book. If you look at his history, and if you look at who he has always communicated with, who he's always worked with, who he's done business with, whether you're talking about his casinos or whether you're talking about his business in Manhattan, none of that would have occurred without the acquiescence of the Jewish population there. You cannot do business in Manhattan without their okay.
Right, right.
He grew up. He went to a private school that was mostly attended by Jewish people.
Yes.
So I think that people have placed a lot of trust in somebody that they cannot trust.
Well, one last thing I'll say to that, Deanna, somebody you and I mutually admired, the late, great Michael Collins Piper.
I miss Mike so much.
Yes, I would be very, what a loss it was not to have his commentary on the goings-ons, and what have you. But, and of course, he is the author. And I've showed it to people recently, not to dissuade or take away any luster from hope in Trump as such. But as you know, he wrote that famous article, Who Towers Over Trump? In the American Free Press.
Yes.
And you're right about so much. In fact, let me just reiterate one thing that I have quoted on talk radio on K-Talk locally in Salt Lake City over the years, and that is this. A lot of people don't know his book, and you're talking to somebody that voted for Donald Trump. Again, a roll of the dice, no pun intended. And what he did, Piper exposed the Mary Carter Paint Company as being a wholly owned subsidiary of the CIA Mossad. That's exactly what the Mary Carter Paint Company was. But that company was taken over, bought out, it morphed into, get this, Resorts International, the Trump Empire. And so, you have that. And so, one might ask, well, if I know about these Jewish connections, and the connections that you point out, after all, he grew up in New York, Mr. Trump, why would I trust him as such? My hope still lies in, is that, is he trying to, Deanna, look with Kirchner and his own daughter, and just like the kings in the old court in Daniel's day and what have you, watchful Jewish eyes, is he trying to break through and thereby, for the rest of us, break through from these Jewish masters, and perhaps did he have something to do with the exposure of Weinstein?
I don't know about that. I think Weinstein exposed himself. He exposed himself.
You are tuned in.
Thanks a lot for the airtime, Deanna.
We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And just getting back to Trump, Kushner's father financed a lot of the settlements over in the Gaza Strip. That does not bode well. Recently, Trump met with Kissinger. And Kissinger has counseled so many presidents and so many other people who were running for office. One would think that, well, knowing Kissinger and the information, the things that I've studied about him, recall that he said about military people that they were nothing but a bunch of stupid animals. So I do not trust Trump for many reasons. I do not trust him. So, okay, let's take Frank in North Carolina. Frank?
Deanna, thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, actually, I have to agree with Kissinger on that. I think military people are a bunch of dumb animals. I'm a Marine Corps, NCO, former, infantry NCO myself. And, it's like what General Smedley Butler said. I think he had stated in War is a Racket that he'd never had. he had never had an original thought until after he'd left the military. And even with these high-ranking officers, I think you'll find they don't have They don't ever speak out. They don't ever speak out or see truth or tell truth until after they're out. But you're right. He did pay a heavy price for that.
He did. And my grandfather was his aide in China. And my grandfather, well, of course, was in the Marine Corps. And they wrote a book together. I don't know that it was ever published. But my grandfather was the pulp king of America during the 1930s and 40s. He's quite an interesting individual. I didn't actually meet him until I was 14. But he was still pro-military. But as you said, Schmedley Butler wrote War is a Racket. And if you read his book and understand what he was saying. And then, of course, as you say, when he got out of the military, he went into a government facility because he was feeling kind of run down. And keep in mind that he had been through a lot of military exercises and was a very strong, sturdy individual. And yet he died very soon after going into a military facility for a rest. He went there to rest. And he died of cancer.
Yeah, he was a two-time recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor, just for those who are unfamiliar with him.
Yes. Things helped. When he went in China, for instance, he was there. He helped the local population. It's amazing. Some of the things that they did in China to help the locals, to rebuild bridges and to do things like that. My father was born out of the country. His first language was Spanish, because he was, you know, was, my grandfather was in the military. But, anyway, enough of that. But go ahead with what you were saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I was late, when I went in the military, there was no such thing, as the internet. I mean, we never heard of cell phones except on Star Trek with Spock and those people.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a little toy cell phone that was a communicator when I was a kid in the 70s, but, I had an aunt and uncle that were kind of like peaceniks from the, you know, flower children days, and I remember they said a few things here and there. We were watching a John Wayne movie one day, me and my two cousins.
Can't stand
and
that.
And what was it? The Green Berets, and they yelled from the other room. My uncle, my dad's sister's husband, he yelled, you know, that's a bunch of propaganda or something. We all just rolled our eyes like, oh yeah. But you know,
he was right.
I joined the Marines. Yeah, but he never warned me, though. When I joined the Marines, he said, well, you really look sharp in your uniform and everything, blah, blah, blah. But see, Ronald Reagan had come along then. See, mm-hmm. He was very successful. He was a technical guy, and he traveled all over the world. He was a technical drafting instructor or something. I don't know, with blueprints and stuff. But see, he did very well. So I guess he got that new patriotism that Ronald Reagan brought, maybe. But the thing is, I didn't wake up. I was neocon. I bought into all that. I used to, you know, the first thing I do when I would get home or get to a hotel room in the evening would be turn on, you know, find out, okay, which channel's Fox News? Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity. And I listened to Rush Limbaugh for 15 years whenever I could at lunchtime. And I never woke up. But I started scratching my head back in early 2005 trying to, I knew something was missing. They weren't telling me the whole truth. I'm not mm-hmm. going to get into that. It would take too long, what it was. But it was the waning days of 2005 and the first couple of weeks of 2006 before the blinders came off. So I was neocon. There was a spell. You know, when you go into the military, you know, you're basically, you're put under a cast, or you're under the cast of a spell where you can't think. You can't use rational, thought, reasoning, or anything like
it's
that.
It's traumatic, you know, training. It's the same kind of training.
But even before that, like you're talking about with the football games and all of that and the honor guards and, you know, patriotism and the Marine Corps drill, you know, they come out, the recruiters come out, you know, to the high schools.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, wow, that seems pretty cool. You know, I like that. I think I could be sharp enough to be one of those guys, and that would be kind of cool. But, you know, the thing is now though, you're prior military with the advent of the internet. I mean, I could see these, you know, these people that come from like blue collar families where they're, you know, there's a lot of ignorance maybe, or maybe not, but, you know, where they, maybe they weren't, didn't really access the internet that much or whatever, but I mean, particularly with college educated, like officers, people that are coming out of West Point and whatnot, I mean, since 9/11, how could they not know they're working for a criminal? It's not our military. It's not our military. It's the banker's military. It's not our government. We are occupied. We were talking about Germany earlier being occupied since World War II. They're still occupied, but we're occupied too. And
absolutely.
You know, I think Zog is as good as anything else. But hey, by the way, I wanted to ask you about something you said earlier. But before I do that, before I forget, you know, a caller earlier had talked about Preston, which Prescott James brought over, you know, during Operation.
Yeah, he said Preston, but he meant Prescott.
Okay, because you got George W. Bush and you got his father, George H.W. Bush. Now, he was a World War II naval pilot, and he was supposedly shot down in the Pacific Theater during World War II, so I wasn't quite understanding that questioning about was Bush brought over Operation Paperclip.
There is a section of the population that has been led to believe that the Bushes are a German family. It's just kind of a convoluted theory that should not be taken seriously.
Well, I've been familiar with that for about 10 years. I was always kind of on the fence about that. But, you know, to me, they're just high-level servant class to the Rothschilds. That's mm-hmm. how I always just, you know, filed them away in my mind. But, hey, you were talking about the textile industry, and that, I was unaware of it. I think of what you were saying, that there was so much control of the textile industry. I wouldn't have thought that.
Absolutely.
But I guess so, because it's a really old industry. I mean, it goes way back. So, but could you, I don't know if the caller might have spoken over you or something, but there was a few key points that I was unable to hear you. Maybe the caller had spoken over you or something. Maybe I was distracted. But could you rehash that real quick, what your experience?
I worked for, I was a fabric rep, and I sold textiles, fabrics, trims, and laces to fabric stores, manufacturers, just whoever I could sell to. In fact, I sold to American Girl Doll when they were still in a little tiny office in downtown Madison. I called on them, and they were wondering about how to do heirloom sewing. I took my sewing machine. I showed them how to do laces, how to put laces to fabric in the best way that they could, in the easiest way that they could. And they were one of my clients. And one of the owners of one of the Swiss lace companies came over. I picked he and the gentleman that I actually worked for that owned a company here in Florida. I picked them up at O'Hare. We drove up to Madison. And at that point in time, their warehouse was the size of a football field. But they were one of my first original clients. So anyway, yes, textiles are monopolized by Jewish people. Whether you're talking about New York, whether you're talking about California, all of the companies that I worked for were owned by Jewish individuals. And
okay, and you had stated too that you had dated a number of these Jewish individuals.
No. I said that they were womanizers, and that no.
Okay, I wouldn't have faulted you if that was the case. I wasn't criticizing. I just, you know, those are always good opportunities to get information. A lot of men are womenizers, you know, a lot of non-Jewish men are womenizers too. I mean, I'm an objective thinker.
That's true, but I found that, many times this one particular company tried to cheat me out of my commission. They were just oh, I don't know how to put this. They just weren't the kind of people that you could trust. And when I was out on the road, gosh, I took my sewing machine with me, and when I was in a hotel room, I'd be quilting or I would be making things. Whereas a lot of the people, a lot of the salespeople would be out drinking or whatever it was they were doing. But I was very hardworking, very competitive. Anyway, it was a very rough business. And what is also very interesting is that pretty soon most of the fabric shops that I'm reading some comments in the chat room, a lot of fabric shops that I used to call on are no longer in business because of the big corporations have come in. For instance, Walmart has a fabric section, and a lot of the reps wanted to sell to Walmart. However, what you do when you sell to the big corporation is you put the little guy out of business. And it's very sad. I saw a lot of businesses go under during that time. I think that probably at the end of my career, as a rep, I don't know that how I could have made a living because of the situation with all of the company or all of the, if I hadn't gone after the manufacturers, I couldn't have done it with just fabric shops. And people used to sew. Women used to sew. Everyone sewed. Everyone seemed to have a sewing machine. People sewed. People made, I made all my kids, I made clothes for my kids, just about everything they wore. Of course, I did a lot of other things too. I made bread and all kinds of things. But anyway, it was a difficult situation.
Yeah, I remember when my grandmother, she had a room designated as a sewing room. It was used for
absolutely
a couple other things, but it was her room. She used to sew her own clothes, and you'd never know it. I mean, they looked like something you'd buy at a store. I mean, she was a very, ladylike, southern woman, but,
I took a tailoring class from a professional tailor so that I could tailor suits for my husband. And they looked better than what he could buy at the store. And I did it because it was an economic issue and because I like to create. And yeah, sewing was something that we did and we were proud to do it. And it was creative and it was satisfying. And in addition to the economic value that it presented.
One last thing, as everybody says, I have to maintain kind of a hard and kind of dark, opinion on one thing, one phenomenon. And, I just don't let the Jews off the hook that easily. The Jews are just known wherever they go in Western civilization, wherever, in America, American society or wherever, wherever they go in, they infiltrate things and they diminish the moral character of that community. And I will not, back off on that. And, it's historical.
You're just being intolerant. Just because they were thrown out of 109 countries doesn't mean it was their fault. It was probably something wrong with those people in those 109 countries. Come on, Frank.
Well, yeah, it's like the bartender thing. I heard somebody describing this like, some bad drunk, he's been thrown out of 190 bars, every bar in town. And he says it's a problem with the bartender.
Absolutely.
He wants to blame the bartender. I'm like, no. If you have a problem with drink, you have a drinking problem, you have a behavior problem, you cannot be in polite society. Anyway, all right. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, let's go to Joel in Wisconsin. Joel?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome.
I had some things to talk about, but it's taking too long. So I'll just bring this up. As far as the people trying to piece together what happened and the current situation in Las Vegas, you got to remember that what you think you know about it, you're getting your information from the people who either perpetrated the crime or are covering it up. with an agenda. So whatever you think you know for sure, I have to doubt that. I mean, we don't even know what happened with JFK. That was over 50 years ago, or Robert Kennedy, or the Gulf of Tonkin, or you were even brought up that you believed there were 6 million Jews that got killed in the Holocaust. They're going to keep
that was a long time ago that I believed that.
I know that, but I know it, but you believed it for a long time, and you were
absolutely.
Yeah, so there's people doing that right now, based on the information that they think they know, when they have to realize who gave them that information. And those people that gave it to them are going to give them something else tomorrow.
Oh, you're right. You're right, Joel. Okay, we're going to go to a quick 3 minute break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna. And I was going to talk about Christopher Columbus today. If you want to know what I think about him, read it in my book. He was a savage murderer who tortured and killed millions of innocent people. It was a piece of garbage. Okay. Joel, did you have some other things that you wanted to say?
Yes, if there's time. I would like to remind the people that on 911, day one, they came out and said there was 50,000 dead people in New York alone. If you remember that, Giuliani came out and said, after the towers went down, he said there's 25,000 people under that pile, and there's 25,000 people under that pile. That was just New York alone.
Yes.
And that number went from 50,000 people down to 3,000.
Yes.
Now look at that percentage of error that they were giving away there.
Indeed.
And this is really why I called. If it'll give my age away. When I was young, I grew up in a 60,000 town of 60,000, and if you go out into the country, you would see road signs that say little town such and such. It would give this town's name, and it would give the population, and then it would say unincorporated.
Right.
Do you remember any? Was that around where you were, too?
Well, there was. No, I grew up in California. There were still, but I know that there are still unincorporated towns.
Oh, I didn't
know that. Not many.
Right. And I used to ask people, what did that mean? And nobody knew. I didn't know there were still some around.
Not very many.
No, I doubt it, yeah. Okay, because that's where I was originally calling, because you were talking about corporations. And that's actually a Jewish idea, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. I thought so. Same with centralized banking. That's, well, we know where that comes from.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's all I got.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, let's take Chris near Las Vegas. Chris, welcome.
Good afternoon, Deanna. You don't have very long, so I want to go back to the first thing.
The time is going by.
That was Experian. And remember, Experian's owners, the CEO there, sold a gargantuan amount of stock several weeks prior to the so-called NADA breach, or maybe they sold it off.
Well, that was Equifax.
Equifax. My misstatement. I didn't mean to intentionally misstate it.
That's
but they absolutely did that and breached the customer's fiduciary duty that they owed to them by selling off the data and posed it as breached, much like the so-called breach of the DNC's downloaded servers by Seth Rich, I think it was, that they whacked.
Yes.
And so the same thing took place in Las Vegas with the owners of MGM and the Mandalay Bay selling off much of their stock, I think 1.65 million shares at about $39 a share. So they made a rather large profit several weeks, I think back in August, prior to this event. And then precipitously this stock here fell, which means they could have repurchased their position, gleaned the income from the sale at the high price, and then bought it back at the cheap price.
Wow. Wow. Very interesting. Well, thank you so much, Chris, and thank you all the callers. And I'm sorry that I couldn't get to you, Kent, and whoever else called in. Thank you so much for joining me today. Take care. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.